Hello and welcome to the Citation Podcast. We aim to give small business owners guidance and practical, straightforward support on how to navigate HR and health and safety issues. I'm Jill McAteer. I'm Director of Employment Law at Citation.
And I'm Emma McGrath. I'm a professional sports solicitor.
And in the podcast today, we're going to be looking at what to do when stress and mental health starts to impact on employees' behaviour and performance. Unfortunately, mental health continues to be a problem amongst employees, with official figures showing it accounted for almost 10% of all sickness absence in 2024. And here at Citation, we can certainly see this reflected in the advice our clients seek from us and how to help navigate these issues. Normally, over the last 10, 15 years, we would expect to give advice on sickness absence. Around about 7% of all our advice is related to that. But in recent years, this has increased to 15%. And one of the biggest drivers in the increase in this has been mental health issues, and in particular, supporting employees who are actually in work but struggling with their mental health. In today's podcast, we'll be looking at some signs you can look out for and giving you some practical tips on how you can support employees who are struggling with their mental health. Now, in this area, as in so many areas of HR, how well your business manages these challenges will really rest almost entirely in the hands of your managers. And I think this is an area that managers find particularly difficult to handle. Emma, has that been your experience when you've been coaching managers and dealing with these situations?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is a really tricky area to manage, I think, for a number of reasons. Thankfully, there is a reduction in the stigma around mental health illnesses, which is brilliant. But I think, employees may be reluctant or unable to share in detail how they're feeling. And indeed, sometimes they just do not want to reveal at all that they're suffering from mental health issues to their manager. So there is that difficulty in sort of knowing quite what's going on. Sometimes there are sort of wider work-related issues that are at play as well. So somebody might, for example, be feeling really stressed, but that's actually showing a problem perhaps in the wider team. So the manager has to be alert to both supporting the employee, but also looking at matters generally, perhaps on workload or sort of any other management style, for example. And then just from a human point of view, these are really difficult conversations to have with somebody who you can see is struggling and perhaps feeling not quite sure how you can help.
Do you think sometimes the reluctance comes from the fact that they feel they need to have all the answers, that they need to know exactly what to tell the employee to do to help the situation, and they just don't feel confident that they've got that information?
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, in generally speaking, obviously, managers are expected to have the answers with any work-related issues. But this is a different context. This is medical issues. And, they don't need to be the expert. And indeed, they shouldn't be the expert. This is something that needs medical assistance. And even if the manager does have any kind of experience of mental health issues, then, that isn't something that they should be applying. It is very much about supporting the employee, but within the context of the medical advice they're receiving.
And from a personal note, in addition to being employment solicitors, we've both been managers for many years. And we know that perhaps one of the most powerful things you can do when someone is struggling is actually give them the time and listening to what support they actually need, and not feel that you have to have all the answers for them. But equally, it's important to be confident that you know how to signpost support for them. So that support could be internal support, or it could be external, such as going to see their GP. But it's important that managers do feel confident in how to respond to these situations. And that's why training them is so important. But it's not just training, it's actually having these conversations. As you said, Emma, it really is a personal conversation. It can be quite awkward. So you really need to have quite a high level of trust between the manager and the employee. So I think it really comes down to the culture of the business. If you ensure that your managers, spend regular time with members of their team, getting to know them as individuals, then it's much easier for them to have that level of trust in order to be able to have these conversations. And not just that, but actually makes it a lot easier for managers to pick up on the signs that something is wrong. And Emma, what would you suggest are the big warning signs that there may be a problem?
Yeah, I mean, every person's different. So, you know, it can be difficult to spot when someone's got mental health issues. And obviously not everybody exhibits symptoms that can be easily spotted. But I suppose, you know, some common signs can be things like tiredness, in terms of mood, things like irritability or being tearful, like nervous speech. And then in terms of sort of perhaps performance issues, things like being indecisive, difficulty concentrating, making mistakes. But I think the key is to know that somebody's behaving differently to how they normally do. So again, like you were saying, Jill, it's about knowing your employees and knowing how they normally are. I suppose other key signs are things, you know, sort of difficulty within sort of interactions within the team and particularly sort of attendance as well. So if somebody starts taking some time off sick or they're in late, you know, that's something to review. The employee might not necessarily tell you that they're off with mental health issues, but sort of the overall picture might lead you to think that you need to ask more questions. I think the key is to be alert to when an employee is acting differently to how they normally are. So this comes back again to the key of sort of knowing your employees. In fact, I was talking to a client about a case example of this last week. So the manager had a grievance from an employee who was saying that her colleague was being really snappy with her, very irritable. And so there was, on the one hand, there was a sort of, you know, really quite legitimate grievance from this employee that she was being treated quite sort of badly at work by her colleague. But the manager knew that this was really out of character for the colleague. And he therefore knew that he needed to, we discussed about sort of stepping back from the situation, looking at the wider picture and really thinking about what was going on. And he therefore met as a sort of slight investigation meeting, but it did have that sort of support element as well with the colleague to say, you know, what's going on? You know, please tell me how you're feeling. And it quickly emerged that she did have some poor mental health issues going on. So it is that sort of being really alert to what's happening rather than, as in that case, sort of focusing on something that was going wrong.
Yes, I think employers can often find themselves in that situation where they have, as you say, a very genuine and legitimate complaint from an employee who has not received appropriate treatment from a colleague. And very, very often employers will be so keen to tackle that issue that they will lose that broader issue of what was going on the other side, what is the other person's side of the story, carrying out a genuine investigation into that. And it can't be stressed enough that you really do need to be balanced and considered in your entire approach to these situations. And also a reminder that you do need to keep the highest levels of confidentiality. So there is an explanation about why the employee has behaved like that, but it would be inappropriate to tell the employee complained about that explanation. You can just reassure them that steps will be taken to make sure that there should be no repeat of that incident in the future.
Yeah, but I think it's a good example of where you know, it just shows a sort of the wider impact and perhaps that, you know, as you say, that this balance, because, you know, there is no doubt that however genuine the illness and however sympathetic the manager is, you know, sort of frequent absences, for example, can mean that there's a wider impact for the organization. So, you know, there could be customer complaints, it can lead to more problems for the rest of the team, like the higher workload, etc. It could even lead to other team members feeling like, you know, they're starting to really struggle. So, and even ultimately to higher turnover. So it is, I think that just comes back to what we were saying in the beginning about it is a really complicated thing to manage. And again, as we've said about training managers, but, you know, there is no doubt things that managers can do to support employees.
I often find there's reluctance in managers in implementing those measures, not because they don't see there is a need for it and they don't sympathise with the individual, but it's the impact that that will have on the wider team, or indeed the perception of the wider team. I've often heard managers say that, well, if I can't put those arrangements in place for this particular employee because it will look like favoritism to other employees, or it will look like this particular person isn't carrying their fair share of the workload, or if I give it to one person, then everyone will want it. And again, it's really important to stress that it is very dangerous to go into that line of thought, because it can detract from what your responsibility is as a manager, which is offering support to that individual who needs it. And of course, you know, there, as you mentioned, there's a lot of different options for support. What would you say good support looks like?
Yeah, so I think we've already talked about communication, but, you know, absolutely, if you can see that somebody's struggling, then setting up more regular support meetings, you know, it is that that sort of opportunity to have an open dialogue. Hopefully trust has already been established, you know, that they're willing to open up to you. And it really means that you've got much more chance of getting in some effective support within the organisation more quickly. We've already talked about signposting the employee for sort of medical assistance. So, you know, it might be pointing them towards their GP if they haven't gone already. It might be that you've got some kind of occupational health set up that you could refer them to. There's obviously mental health charities who can provide advice. I think another really useful tool are employee wellness action plans. So we would refer our clients to, for example, the template that you can get from the Mind charity website. So what this is a document to use in discussions with the employee and to work through and look for things like what they find really difficult at work, signs that they're saying they think displays that their mental health is deteriorating, and then what they want the manager to do if they spot these signs. So I was talking a little while ago to a client and sort of coaching them how to use it with an employee who was struggling. So our client sat down with the employee and talked about what she was struggling with, and she was particularly flagging about the high number of emails was something that she found really difficult and triggered her anxiety. So they sort of talked about how they could collate those better and make them more manageable. And then she was flagging that she thinks that she becomes very quiet when she's struggling, and how she thinks she spends less time on her appearance. So she was flagging those as signs that the manager should sort of look out for. And then they agreed that if she did seem to be deteriorating, she would want to have more regular meetings and really, you know, much more regular checks in. And she was very open to that in a way, as opposed to sort of feeling like, you know, she acknowledged that she wouldn't feel like the manager was interfering.
Yes, I think they're a fantastic tool. And I remember going to a mental health conference a few years ago where one of the keynote speakers was a mental health nurse who actually had a longstanding mental health issue herself. And she spoke really powerfully about how empowering it was for her when she was well and sitting down with her manager and explaining what the signs would be when she needed help and actually what sort of help she needed at that time. So very empowering for her. But also, I think one of the great things about this is if you have this plan in place, it gives managers so much more confidence in about having to tackle it, because very often when things are becoming more difficult and the employee is really struggling, they will not have the insight that they had at the time that they agreed this with the manager. So I'm a big fan of them. I also think another powerful tool is return to work interviews. They really should be part and parcel of every absence management process within the business and not be seen as something that's done, most of the time. It should be done all the time, even if it's just a day. And again, I think that opportunity to sit down and discuss how someone is feeling. Are they well enough to come back? Very often, actually, there are some stats, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but they're very high, which says that the number of people who are struggling with their mental health will actually phone in and put their absence down to some other reason. And very often people who are struggling with their mental health, this is not really recorded in their absence figures. But whereas if you're having a conversation with a manager you've got a high level of trust with, it is more likely that people will be open about their struggles. And I think that can only help get things back on track and get an early intervention. But of course, there are lots of other measures that managers can put in place.
Yes. And I think, you know, particularly all the idea of all this that we're talking about in communication, et cetera, is about sort of gathering information. And then it is important to then apply that to how you can help the employee. So it's thinking about what kind of reasonable adjustments you can make that would help them. So, you know, things like perhaps a late start, there might be a temporary adjustment in duties, extra training, sometimes new equipment can help. It's all the sort of really having that conversation with them, perhaps also with some medical input from a GP, for example, or occupational health, and just thinking about how, you know, what support you can have. Although, of course, it is about what the business can reasonably accommodate. So sometimes an employee would suggest something that actually, although it would have a real benefit for them, it's going to cause real problems for the organisation. You know, for example, in terms of sort of organising work amongst existing staff. So it isn't something that they have to agree to, but the manager needs to be, again, listening and looking at what they can do within the sort of the realms of what's possible.
And sometimes it will be the case that actually the employee is suffering so much that they can't be in work and it leads to a longer term sickness absence. But again, communication during this period is so important. A lot of employers are a bit worried about contacting people who are off sick on longer periods, especially if there's a mental health issue behind that absence. They feel that they don't want to feel as if they're hounding the employee. But actually, being away from work can feel very isolating for employees as well. So I think having regular welfare meetings, taking your lead from the employee about how they want those meetings to take place, I think it's always important. Again, going back to what you said earlier, Emma, you really do need to listen to the individual, because for lots of people, they will want regular contact. But for others, they may feel that they do need a period where they want to keep contact to a minimum and they'll just be submitting fit notes. But having a conversation, understanding what the welfare meetings, what format they should take. But, you know, do they want them to be at their home? Would they like them to be on a Teams call or on the telephone? Just looking at what is best for that particular individual. Obviously, making sure that they stay on top of their fit notes, but also looking to see all the time about how they can support them in coming back to work, because that will obviously be the goal, to see how you can get them back, what support they may need in order to be able to achieve that goal. And not to think that when they do come back to work, that's the end of it. They may need more support. And for example, not suddenly have them turn up for work on the first day and just left to get on with it. You know, having a meeting with them, making sure that they're told of any changes that have happened in their absence. And, you know, looking at potentially a phased return if they feel that it may be a bit too much for them to come back to work full time right from the very beginning. And we've talked about all of these measures as things which I'm sure employers will want to do to support their employees with their mental health challenges. Not just because as a good employer, that's what you want to do is look after your people, but also it helps the business, it helps productivity, it helps absence rates, it helps retention. But we can't overlook the fact there are also legal obligations in this area as well. A lot of the employees who are struggling with their mental health are probably going to be classified as disabled under the Equality Act. So a disability is defined as any physical or mental health condition which has lasted or is likely to last for at least 12 months or more and has a substantial adverse effect on their day-to-day activities.
Yeah, and of course, it's important to remember that you have to consider the employee without the benefit of any medication. So, you know, sometimes an employee is actually coping with life generally, but only because they've been prescribed very effective medication. And that's so therefore, you know, they would still be classed as disabled. So I think, as you say, probably a lot of employees who have ongoing mental health issues are going to be classed as disabled under the Equality Act.
And in those cases, offering supportive measures is not just something which employers should do to try to support their employees, but it's actually a legal requirement to make reasonable adjustments. This is something which isn't just on the employee to think of. Some employers, fall into the trap of thinking, well, I'll consider what requests they make and see whether or not I can do that. But it is actually the onus is also on them to see or proactively think about how they could support the employee. Of course, it does have to be reasonable adjustments. So a lot of thought has to be given to requests. But I would equally say that if an employer was going to refuse a request for what the employee considered to be a reasonable adjustment, you really need to have a very strong evidence as to why that is not reasonable.
I think the final legal point to mention in this section is where if an employer takes negative action that's about something that has arisen from the employee's disability, then this could also be disability discrimination. So I think an example that I often talk to clients about is where if an employer's got like a set absence management process and they sort of feel that they're applying that fairly because they're disciplining all employees once they've reached a certain level of absence, this could still be discrimination because if somebody's disabled and they're off because of that disability, so for example, they're off because of a long-term mental health condition, then if the employer applies their usual standards and gives them, say, a written warning for their absence, that would be, regardless of whether they treat all employees that way, that is going to be discrimination because it's arising out of their sickness absence that's from their disability. So it's thinking then about how the employer has to give much more leeway and support before they could justify taking, this more punitive action.
And I think it might be easier for employers to make the link between the disability and taking action for absence. But actually, this discrimination arising from a disability can pop up quite often in relation to issues with managing performance and conduct. One of the leading cases involved a support worker who was dealing with colleagues and with vulnerable service users. And during her probation, her employer had several issues with her because accuracy of her work, but also she could be rather curt in her email communications. They thought the tone was inappropriate. A few colleagues had complained about it, and she was dismissed on a probationary dismissal for those reasons. She appealed, and at the appeal, she explained that she was suffering from poor mental health and had done for several years. And she felt that probably was one of the reasons why she could come across as being quite curt in her email correspondence. And the employer refused the appeal, firstly on the basis that the person who dismissed her hadn't known about her mental health condition at the time that they dismissed her, and secondly, the fact that even if that accounted for the reason why she was sending some inappropriate emails, it didn't account for issues such as accuracy in her work. And she actually was successful in her claim for discrimination arising from a disability. Because the employer was aware during the appeal process, and that's part of the process, but also it doesn't have to be the sole reason for the behaviour or performance. It just has to be a significant reason. And there was no doubt that the tone of these emails, there was a link with her mental health issues. So I think the advice for employers really has to be that if you know that the employee is suffering from some physical or mental condition which might be contributing to the issues with their performance or their conduct that you're concerned about, you really need to consider getting perhaps medical evidence or taking advice before you discipline on that basis.
So I think to finish off, if we just have a think about, wider wellbeing strategies that it's really good for employers to have in place. So being alert to recurring issues, general sickness records within a department, for example, that can all help to sort of generally review how things are going for your organization and whether there is any kind of like unsustainable workload or a rogue manager, for example, that you need to take action on. I think as well, some jobs involve more risk factors than others in terms of sort of mental health issues. So for example, if the employee is doing lone working, long hours or a high risk role. So, it may well be that in those kind of roles, you need to think about risk assessing particularly carefully and considering any measures that you can apply to help sort of the employees doing those roles feel safer at work. It's really good to think about whether you want to introduce, say, an employee assistance program, which is a confidential external counselling for employees. So it means that they can go somewhere to get external counselling, for help with what they're going through, which again is a really good thing for managers to signpost if somebody has come to them with issues. Good to think about appointing some mental health first aiders. That sort of shows the organisation's investment in wanting to assist people, and they can of course then give that wider support in terms of sort of particularly signposting, for example. And then things like awareness campaigns. So of course, on the 10th of October, we've got World Mental Health Day, and it's thinking about sort of promoting that within the organisation. And really that helps to create that sort of culture of open communications and trust.
And underpinning it all, training your managers, making sure that they're confident in how to handle these conversations and what support is available, how to signpost employees to that support. And making sure they do have time to spend with their team so that they get to know them and they can spot these issues and offer the best support when they do arise. Well, I hope that's been helpful. But as we've stated in this podcast, these are really difficult, quite challenging situations to manage. So if you're coming away still with some questions, don't worry, that's perfectly natural. And that's what we are here to help our clients with. But I do hope you've enjoyed the episode. So thanks for listening, and it's goodbye from me.
Yes, thank you, and goodbye.